Welcome to the Meat Company.
You're listening to From the Butcher's Block with hosts Jason Hendrick and Michael Buckley, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California.
Welcome back to From the Butcher's Block. I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry, sitting next to my pal Michael Buckley, owner and operator of the Ventura Meat Company, where we are broadcasting. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on over here at this butcher block. We've got Nick slicing away on this chuck. And I think for this segment, I want to get into this chuck a little bit. I want to break down and tell the listeners kind of what he's doing and show a little bit of what some of these cuts are about. I know Curtis, our engineer behind the board and the mic, he's curious. He's wanting to know. He's asking questions. So we're going to try to help him out.
Yes.
And help everybody else out as well.
He's probably not the only one with a question.
He's probably not. So, Michael, we're on the animal, on the cow, not just to be all generic and passe vague. Where's the chuck? That shoulder.
It's on the shoulder.
It's on the shoulder. So this bone that we're looking at, when we just to come over here, thanks to the beautiful technology of Curtis's new lavalier and boom mics, what's this blade, this bone?
That's the shoulder blade.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be back here behind, just like you're going to find on yourself.
Absolutely right.
I mean, when I reach back, I can feel,
your shoulder
my
blade.
Own blade.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, he's slowly removing a couple sections as well.
He is.
And that's going to yield you what cuts for the case?
Roasts, mainly. We try to get as many roasts as we can out of the chuck. But we talk about this a lot, about how, demand drives supply. And it may all end up as ground beef.
Well, we hope not, because there's a couple of beautiful-looking muscle structures there. Now, Nick has a few cuts laid out on the block as well.
Yes.
What has he already parceled out? What's the portion?
You can kind of see the indentation on the blade there. Those are muscles that came off of the blade.
And we're talking about these right here.
That's right.
That blade piece.
Yep, that's the flat iron steak. And its whole piece, it's referred to as a top blade roast because it sits on top of the blade. But, you can fillet that open, and Nick's going to get into that. There's a big vein that runs through the middle. And if you fillet that piece open and you take out the vein, it makes for some very nice steaks. They're referred to as flat iron steaks. The other piece is referred to as the chuck tender.
Okay. Tender, and it looks very similar to the tenderloin you're going to get any other time.
Yeah, it is one of the most tender pieces in the shoulder, no doubt. And again, because it sits on top of the blade, similar to the way that the top blade roast does, it doesn't do as much work as, say, some of the other muscles in the shoulder that are responsible for load-bearing. That's what makes a muscle tough.
Okay.
Work.
Now, that roast that he's working on, though, again, hopefully, my personal opinion, doesn't end up as ground beef.
Yeah.
You could use, that could be one of those Christmas roasts that we were referring to in the last broadcast.
Why not?
You put that in a nice big crock or a roasting pot with some beautiful holiday vegetables, your typical carrots, onion, celery.
Yep.
But also you could do some parsnips. You could do some radish or some rutabaga in there and slow cook all that together. You end up with a rich broth at the bottom that can be turned into a gravy or just left to essentially stew those vegetables into a great base. For me, I would let those vegetables all cook down to a nice, soft consistency, bring out a semi-shallow bowl, lay some of those cooked vegetables in the bottom, and a couple slices of that roast right on top.
That sounds delicious.
And there's your holiday meal.
Absolutely right.
So this bone, is there any use for you with that blade?
Well, we try to sell something like that as a pet bone. Not whole, but we try to cut it down. And, your dog is going to have a lot of fun chewing on that for a few days. Getting back into the conversation of a stock or a bone broth or something like that. You certainly can use that. You're going to get some flavor out of it, but you can almost see through it, So there's...
It doesn't have the density that you would see in most of the bones that either A, you're selling off or pets or right. that you're going to cook down like an ossobuco or a
stock.
Yeah,
that's a very interesting conversation in and of itself because, you know, people want to give their dog the big femur bone and that's all fine and good. But, you know, if you take that femur bone and you lop it in half and you throw it in your crock pot, you can have it.
Now you both could be smiling. You and your dog could sit next to each other at the table.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
People and dogs living together, mass chaos.
I know where you got that.
I think the original line was cats and dogs living
cats
together.
Cats and dogs living together in harmony.
When we look at this beef,
yeah,
especially for some of those roast cuts that I'm going to slow cook, I'm going to have leftovers, I'm going to have a lot of it on my counter, in my fridge. I'm going to, one, probably pick at it in the mornings when my wife's not looking and just eat little niblets right. as I go throughout the day. But if I want to do a sandwich style or I want to dice it up and put it in some scrambled eggs in the morning, I may be drizzling a little bit of sriracha on top of that, which brings me to my disheartening topic of the evening.
Well, I was going to say, get your licks in while you can.
Get your licks in while you can, pun intended, because sriracha right now is on a 35-day production hold. The Hui Huang Food Company.
Well pronounced, by the way.
They are the original maker. Sriracha is not a... Unfortunately, when you go backward, if you look through the history of that company, the founder of Sriracha Sauce did not trademark or patent the name because of the process that he uses for the chilies. So
I don't know if it's possible to kick yourself,
yeah.
but I'm sure he's tried.
I have had this discussion with other people in the past, but Sriracha now is kind of a generic term for this style of chili sauce. There are some in other companies you can find. They also do a chili garlic and a sambal oleek, which is kind of that ground chili, more of a chunky paste, which is delicious. Most any kind of Vietnamese or pho restaurant is going to have that on their tabletop.
Say that word again.
Pho.
I know.
P-H-O. Pho.
Yeah.
But when we're looking at these beef cuts on the counter... You're going to see a lot of these thin sliced beef cuts in a pho soup as well.
Yep.
They're going to toss the sriracha
chili. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But unfortunately, again, the sriracha, the Hui Huang Food Company is on a 35-day production hold because their neighbors in Irwindale have been complaining about the smell and the burning sensation of their chili production.
Yeah.
They've got a smaller factory. They need to up production. So they open another facility in Irwindale. And now all of a sudden... Everyone's up in arms. They're having issues being near the sriracha production.
Is this a civil suit?
It is not a civil suit yet. I have no doubt that it'll probably come to that just right. because I don't think people are really going to let it go. But the California Department of Public Health is kind of investigating right now the process that's involved and how they can improve this. But to the owner's credit.
Yeah.
He says, my workers have never complained, and they're making the stuff.
That's pretty interesting.
So I would
Are you wondering about the validity of the Irwindale people?
I personally would be questioning the validity of the claim. I'm not there. I don't live in Irwindale. I don't
That's
know.
That's strange because, you know, let's say, I mean, how many people does that place employ? You know, I mean, aren't there at least some people that live in Irwindale that work there?
I have to imagine.
So maybe there's a conflict of interest here. People going, hey, we don't smell it. We work here. They want to keep their jobs, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful quote right here, too. CEO David Tran, Hui Huang Foods CEO David Tran, says that this is a golden opportunity for him to show that Hui Huang places the best interests of its customers and community ahead of its own short-term profits.
So I see where this is going.
Which is pretty cool because he's saying, hey, this is going to have a major impact to us. 35-day production hold.
Absolutely.
But he's committed to making it right with the community and with his... You know, business and employees. So we'll see how this turns out. I personally hope it works
you
out for the best.
You just want some sriracha.
I may have to stock my shelves with sriracha. I mean, that's...
Well, again, it's supply and demand.
It is supply
and
demand.
If people demand it, someone will supply it.
And you know what? Thank you, Curtis, as our engineer. He did pull up and remind me that one of our local farms here in Ventura County is the sole provider of the chilies that... are used at Hui Huang Foods to make sriracha. And that is Underwood Farms. And I forgot that point. So thank you for that reminder.
That's a very good point.
And that, which brings us right back to what we were going to talk about in a roundabout way tonight with Cat Merrick. And that's that local impact community.
Yeah.
We will be affected by this 35-day production hold, and if it elongates or there's additional issues that they have to battle through, our county will be affected by this. Now, they only, it's a distinct number of months that they actually produce the fresh peppers when they're harvested. But even still, as a major farm in Ventura County, Underwood Farms is going to feel the pain for this if it has any kind of long-lasting litigation.
Perishable commodity. If you produce it, you need someone to buy it. And if you don't have someone to buy it, then usually what you have to do is undersell.
And I would challenge people to look up the statistics, but I know I've been in casual conversation with a few people that say the sriracha sauce, that beautiful spicy ketchupy focus of many meals in my home, is one of the leading and surging staples.
People wear t-shirts.
Condiments in American households right now.
It's almost like
it's surpassing mustard and ketchup.
That's bold.
It is bold, but it's happening.
All right. No, it is almost getting that household. You see kids wearing t-shirts and things. And
affectionately and commonly referred to as the rooster sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
As the rooster sauce.
Could I have more rooster sauce, man?
Nothing wrong with a little rooster sauce. I'm still intrigued by what's going on here.
He's
the care and the delicateness.
The delicate nature.
It is a delicacy by the time he's done. But
it will be.
Delicate nature with which he's trimming this beef over here.
It's important. It's important work.
Nick, I know you don't have a mic, but earlier you threw out a suggestion on how you could use some of these meats. And again, going back
to talk really loud, Nick.
The pho focus, I think his suggestion applies. And then I could throw a little sriracha. It's the creativity is a must with some of these cuts.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the reasons that, you know, I wanted Nick to come in here. We have a few different people that are capable of, you know, putting a knife to a piece of meat, and Nick really seems to excel at creativity. That's exciting for me because I really don't dictate all that much. I mean, he's culinarily inclined. He knows what the expectations are. You know, when you're taking off some silver skin or something like that, yeah, you don't want to take off too much lean. I mean, that's pretty easy to understand.
And that lean is dollars in your pocket as a business owner.
It's a numbers game. We've said that in many of the classes that, you know, we've held here, that butchery is, by and large, a numbers game. And, you know, you just want to eliminate waste. Now, that's true in any industry. Identifying it, minimizing it, eliminating it, all important things.
Sure.
But there's a reason that we're taking this stuff off, and it's so you enjoy it when you eat it. Some of that stuff's not going to cook off, you know?
Just to bundle it, because unfortunately, my heart's still, it's a little broken about this whole sriracha story.
Right.
But
let it out.
These cuts, again, they tie into that pho cuisine that I love.
Sure.
And with some of the wastes that we're focusing on here, they use a lot of very thin cuts, whether it be chuck or sirloin, or they've got some more high-end cuts sometimes they use. But again, slice very thin, allows it to cook in the hot broth.
Yep.
I like to put a lot of sriracha and turn my broth a little brown. One of the other things they use in pho, though, is tendon.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the chuck, we're not seeing a lot of tendon that can be used.
Well,
but there is a little bit of tendon that he's going to be able to display. Mm-hmm. Where are you getting a lot of that? Is there any use for that in this particular shop, or is there a focus outside of the restaurant and commercial industry?
We seek out wholesale opportunities, and we're still trying to solidify a lot of that. The unfortunate thing is a lot of these restaurants that are in the habit of doing it, is their supply chains are already set up. So then, you know, I've never been a very good salesman. But, you know, I think we have to learn how to do that a little
better. You like to let the product talk for itself.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and it would. But, yeah, you're right. Tendons and things like that, where are they coming from? Well, they're around the joints. And how many joints are there in a shoulder?
There's one.
So,
Nick, can you hold that tendon up to the camera one more time? Now, I don't end up eating the tendon in my pho soup. I like it just as a flavor agent.
Sure.
And I think it adds a certain gelatinous component that creates a good richness. But a lot of people do like it. It can be a little chewy and tough.
Sure.
I would encourage anyone who likes Vietnamese or Indonesian style cooking.
Makes a good point.
There you go. And so just in case you weren't able to hear that, Nick says it doesn't have to be chewy and tough.
He should wear this microphone.
He should wear this.
Sit over here and
we could do a boom mic for you in the next segment. Let Nick run the wireless. But he says let it cook for 4 to 6 hours. It's going to allow some of that great collagen to escape and to really soften that into a luscious treat.
Absolutely. Use all of it. There's applications for a lot more than just lean meat. You know, got to be creative.
You do have to be creative, especially nowadays. Michael, I want to toss it to you. I want to ask you what's on your brain right now, because I know we had a couple ideas we threw out before the broadcast. So,
I'm always thinking about, you know, the battle of convincing people that this is a nutritious commodity. You know, I always feel like we ice skate uphill with that, and it's, you know, the demonization of red meat is nothing new. And that continues. I mean, once every 2 or 3 months, there's a study that comes out that just throws red meat right under the bus. And, you know, it's correlation mostly, but as we consume less red meat, we've been doing it for the past 30 some odd years, you know, what happens? Obesity goes up. And, you know, you're not, again, corollary, not cause, not black and white. But this is a nutritious commodity, especially in the fats and things like that, you know, essential fatty acids. Well, those are found in animal proteins and, you know, salmon, meat. I don't know what you think the word essential means, but
in its core definition,
I'm pretty sure I know what it means. I'm pretty sure that means you need it. So, yeah, that's always on my mind, and it's always it's something that I really try to emphasize as much as possible, and it makes it – maybe that's part of the salesmanship that I try to – the salesman approach that I try to take with offering something like this to restaurants is I'm always getting into nutrients and things like that. And,
sure.
And, you know, unless they're having that conversation with their customers in their establishment, you know, then it just becomes like – and are trying to sell a muffler to somebody that runs a shoe store, you know. It's like, I don't care.
With the advent of the fat focus that you've taken, and we talked about the beef fat in the case,
yep.
And trying to move to tallow. Have you seen an uptick in people exploring different styles of fat that they can cook with, or is it still pretty much butter, olive oil, and maybe a little pork fat?
I think the tide is turning and more people are realizing it's got to start with eliminating the hydrogenated oils and things like that, the canola oils and the vegetable oils and things like that. And it's the same conversation as grass-fed beef. It's the same conversation because it's an imbalanced ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. Now, I mentioned essential fatty acids. That's what we're talking about. You know, omega-3 fatty acids, they're pretty important.
Sure.
They're abundant in a lot of the fats in grass-fed beef. But the important thing is that ratio of omega-6 to omega-3, and this is one of the biggest differences between grain-fed beef and grass-fed beef, is in grain-fed beef, you have an imbalanced ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. In some cases, they've assumed that it's as much as 20 to 1.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, our brains are comprised of omega-3s, and we thrive off of that. There's a reason fish is referred to as brain food. That's why. So, same idea, though. Hydrogenated oils, vegetable oils, and things like that, they have a imbalance of omega 6 to omega 3, and grass fed beef fat balances.
It's not a natural process to extract oils from vegetables anyway.
How do you get oil out of sunflowers? Pray tell.
There's a little bit of it in there, but the amount of the volume of sunflowers you have to use, just to use that as our distinct example, and the amount of pressure and focus.
I'm glad you brought pressure, because what does that create? That creates heat, you know, and then that changes everything. You know, the way that some of these oils are produced makes it even worse.
Sure.
Makes it even worse. So, you know, use fats and things that just Mother Nature naturally produces, instead of things that are made in laboratories. And come on, do you really think vegetable oil is better for you than beef tallow? Come on.
It doesn't taste any better.
Come on.
It's far from tasting better.
Come on.
But that's my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm. May as well just use fat.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. And we talked about pork fat in the past, too.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you can't go wrong with pork fat.
No.
In
any occasion.
My grandmother used to cook the bacon and pour the fat into the coffee cup.
Yep.
Or the coffee can, I should say, not a cup. Mm-hmm. And let it sit on the stove and solidify. And then she would scoop that out and cook with it later on.
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? How old did she live to be, if you don't mind asking?
My living grandmother right now is 92.
Here we are.
Unfortunately, the grandmother who used to, they both did it, but my other grandmother used to actually spoon the bacon fat over the eggs as she was frying them. She passed away from cancer, so she got hit with another vice.
Right.
My vice
is
pork fat. Her vice was cigarettes.
I see.
I mean, it was flavorful.
Yes.
And it did the job. Like, I tried it for my wife one time, and she admitted. She's a California.
And your wife doesn't eat
she tries to stay lean
with
the products she consumes. She doesn't eat a lot of fat. She does appreciate where it comes from and the focus, you know, of it being a part of your diet, but not a heavy component.
Mm-hmm.
She admitted full-fledged, the eggs were delicious.
Yes.
But I cooked the bacon, and then I cracked the egg into the pan, and I spooned the fat over the top, and it leaves a little specks of brown, you know, bacon bit on it. Was awesome.
Yes.
When it's the right pig and it's fed the right diet. I have noticed with the pork that you carry in the case, moving away from the beef fat that we talked about into the pork fat, there is a certain clarity with the fat that's running off the pork belly.
We hear people using the word clean a lot, that it tastes clean.
A lot of store-bought bacon that I've had in the past, when you cook it down, that fat that's rendered off of that bacon, it will congeal and it'll solidify quickly into a cloudy, fatty.
Oh, absolutely.
But the fats that come off of the pork belly and the bacon we're pulling out of this shop, they'll stay clear and liquid for a couple hours.
Yeah, absolutely. They won't start to brown up on you. It's just a reflection of the quality, and I do think it has a lot to do with, I mean, our opinions on pork are just as strong as our opinions on beef, and one of the biggest convictions that I have about pork is it needs to have some room to roam around. And that seems simple, but, you know, we've learned that with any amount of volume production of pork, that starts to become an impossibility. Or a less likely scenario, you know. So I think giving pigs room to roam around is one of the biggest factors.
I've been on a couple of farms where the pigs have definitely been roaming. I don't want to get into the psychological or emotional
How could you?
position of a pig. I can't speak for what's going on in the pig's head and in its soul, but
it's all,
I would say, if nothing else,
it's all
for
conjecture.
The tie-in to the pig's natural life cycle and its activity levels, roaming is preferable to confined.
A pig will go feral in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Nick, you know that. 2 weeks. They will grow full. So if a pig gets outside of a farmed context and gets out into the wilderness, in 2 weeks it will be completely covered in fur, tusks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
What does that tell you about a pig's biology? it's greatly affected by how much space they have to run around.
That's interesting. So that just further justifies for me some of these reality shows that are out there.
I knew that before the book, in all fairness.
And in the book you're referring to?
Yeah, well, we were talking about, Nick let me borrow a book called Pig Perfect. And yeah, that's referred to in Pig Perfect, but I didn't know that before.
Oh, well,
but I read it in another book.
Touche, Michael Buckley. So going down that rabbit hole, then, have you seen a couple of these shows out there where the pig hunters, down in Florida?
Yeah.
And there's like three teams that they profile. It's a family, and they...
What do they call it? Porkzilla or something?
Something like that. And the two girls are out there as a team, and then the dad and somebody else or another team. The way that they track these pigs, the wild pigs down there, which would essentially fall under the feral classification.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Whether it was domesticated to begin with or it was just wild, who cares? They send the dogs after the pigs.
Why not?
And the dogs track it down. They literally tackle the pig to the ground, and they kind of wrestle it to the point where all of a sudden here comes the cavalry. Mm. They lasso the pig and throw it up on the front bumper.
Of course they do. So, that's the South for you.
That's the South.
Yeah.
You grew up in Tennessee.
I did.
You know.
A little. Not really. Not really.
He's not a hunter. He's a gatherer of fine quality meats.
Yeah, I guess I'm a gatherer. I don't know. That's a... Right.
You're a coordinator of resources.
That's not the house I grew up in, I guess.
I didn't grow up in that household either. I've got uncles and cousins that have been hunters, and they do the Nebraska and Missouri fowl hunting. Yeah. You know, they're doing pheasant and squab and that, but...
It's something that you know, your dad does, your grandfather does.
Either in it or you're not.
Yeah. No, we didn't have a lot of guns or anything like that.
So, well, with that, I think it's an awesome place to take another break.
Okay.
We've talked about sriracha and how it applies to some of these cuts of meat that Nick's whipping up and
this
the scarcity of it.
Crazy.
We're slinging feral pigs out there as a topic. We probably need to take a breath and come back with something new.
Yes, indeed.
This has been From the Butcher's Block, broadcasting from the Ventura Meat Company in Ventura, California. You can find past shows at everybodyshungry.org/butchersblock and through iTunes. Follow us on social media through the hashtag Butcher's Block Show.